On this episode of Still Loading, it's Mario Month Round 3. Hey guys, it's Josh, and welcome back to this third episode of Mario Month for Still Loading. This episode and the previous episode are still part of the 40 for 40 series, as the game I covered last week, Super Mario Bros. 2, I do own, complete in the box. And the game we are covering this week, for those who couldn't figure it out, is Super Mario Bros. 3, which I also own, complete in the box. Now, for many, this is the crown jewel of Mario games on the NES. And for once, I don't actually have a history lesson on this one, at least not off the top of my head. So let's continue on with this. For this week's episode, once again, Casey is back. You guys are going to be getting a month of Casey, so...
Get used to it.
Yeah, get used to it, bitches. thank you again for joining me, Casey. This has been... I mean, you guys are all hearing this weeks apart, but we're doing the big batch recording session tonight, and it's getting late, and we're sleepy.
I'm not leaving. Ever.
We're doing Super Mario Bros. 3, the crown jewel of Mario games for the NES. So, as I've done in the previous two episodes, Casey, where did you first come to love this game?
I mean, kind of the same way as from my history with Super Mario Bros. 2.
Super Mario All-Stars?
Yep, Super Mario All-Stars. And if, for those who... haven't listened to the previous episode, I suggest you do, but before you do, my history with that is my mom ordered the game from a catalog, catalogs, what are those?
When they still exist.
Yeah.
I guess they still do. Actually, so my wife has a bunch of Harry Potter memorabilia, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she got most of that from catalogs, believe it or not. Ah. Granted, that was like mid-2000s, like 2005, 2006, but still, that was kind of
cool.
Like when they were on their way out and the internet was on its way in.
Yeah, that, it's still pretty neat, though, to think about how things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my mom, she ordered it from a catalog. I came home from preschool one day.
Preschool?
Yeah, 93, 94.
I didn't get a freaking Nintendo until I was like 10, and that was 1999 at that point. I remember I got it, I don't know if it was on my 10th birthday, I think I got it for Christmas actually when I was 10, so it was like right before the year 2000, and that was my first video game console. But freaking Mr. Casey's got, I'm just kidding, got it.
Well,
they're probably like,
all right, you know what, you can't keep staying at Nan and Pop's anymore playing the Super Nintendo. We're just gonna buy you one for Christmas.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Or no, I'm sorry, Santa got it for me for Christmas. But yeah, and then I came home, I got the game, and I just remember playing. I'm pretty sure 1, 2, and 3, mostly 3. Basically, that whole night until I had to go to bed.
And 3 is where we are kind of wrapping up the Mario stuff for the month of Mario. There might be a couple extra surprises in the last couple of weeks, but. This is the last of the core Mario games on the NES, and dear God, did they go out with a bang. I mean, this game is widely considered the best game of all time by many, many people, for good reason, too. Now, I don't really know what I consider the best game of all time, but I can tell you this. I was thinking about this, actually, before. I forget what podcast I was listening to. It might have been No Geeks Allowed, which I've promoted before in the last couple episodes, but on their podcast I remember them saying, like, if you could pick one game on a desert island, which would it be? And even though I didn't grow up with Super Mario 3, like I said on tons of other episodes, but I don't know if this is anyone's first episode, I did not grow up with the NES or the Super Nintendo. My first console was the N64, so retroactively I've been getting way into video games, and as such I now have a collection of video games going all the way back to the Atari 2600. In any case, neither here nor there. I would actually still put this game on my list. I would probably put this game as one of the games I would my only game on to bring with me on a desert island, for this one reason only. There's a lot of secrets, and since it's a difficult game and I suck at platformers, I'd have nothing but time to get good at it. Additionally, you have great music in the game, you have great graphics, you have fun controls, fun different levels, tons of new gameplay mechanic ideas. Like, they just threw all the shit at the wall in this game, and I would say 90% of it stuck, and it was great.
Mm-hmm. How did you first come into contact with this gem?
So, like I said, I didn't grow up with it. However, I did have friends at church and neighbors who did have video games. Though my neighbors, if you guys remember, I believe it was on the Super Mario Brothers episode, I mentioned how my neighbors had a Genesis, and I didn't really know what the difference between Genesis and Nintendo was back at the time. But there was a family from church that they would have like parties every now and then, and I would go over. Or and I actually their son Mike would babysit my brother Mike and I, and they would have Nintendo and Super Nintendo, and along with that they had Super Mario World, Super Mario 3, and the original Super Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt, and I remember playing all of them there, and I wasn't quite old enough to understand that I understood these were all Mario. But I didn't quite get why they were different. Like, I didn't understand, like, why did this Mario look different than this one? I thought it was all the same game. I had no idea about the graphical difference. I mean, I noticed the graphical differences, but it really didn't hit me, especially as a kid. So I remember playing this as a kid over at this church family's house. And that was my first encounter with it. And as I got older, my friends would not really, I didn't have a lot of friends that would play video games. My neighbors were more into sports. And then when I got my N64, I just kind of shut them out forever. I'm like, yeah, I don't need you. And it honestly, it's sad to say, but it was kind of for the better because as I got older, I realized I really didn't have that much in common with them. It was more just, we were neighbors. So that's what we did. We hung out with each other. So I had a lot of good times with them, but you know, I was the kid that always wanted to go over to their house just to play video games. They were the ones that wanted me to come over so we could play outside. And I'm like, fuck that. I want to play some Sonic. So that's pretty much where it started. And then I kind of got reacquainted with it once I started getting into collecting again. Once I started discovering people like the Angry Video Game Nerd and watching reviews on it and stuff like that. And once I got into my gaming kick, my game collecting kick, that's when I really went all out for it. I went full bore and I just started to play it. And we actually, this is, if you guys listen to the other episodes, this is the one game we did beat when we went back to replay all of these.
Yeah. It's so much fun. But I mean, that kind of goes without saying for, you know, big, you know, Mario fans out there. You know, extending on what you were saying, you know, how you grew up with it. My buddy at the time, you know, we're still in contact and whatnot. His name's George. He and I were big fans of Mario in general. And we would, whenever we would go over each other's houses, we would, you know, try and beat the older ones, specifically 3 and World. And we would have kind of like friendly rivalries as to, you know, who was the better Super Mario Brothers player. And it was fun. It was good times.
Who won? Was it George? It was George, wasn't it?
I honestly don't remember. I think some levels he was really good at, other levels I was really good at. It was kind of like when you and I started playing the older levels, or the older games a couple weeks ago, just get reacquainted, because I haven't played it in so long. There were some things where I'm like, here, you take care of it, and then you did it, no problem, and then vice versa, so.
Well, I mean, you did end up beating most of the final levels when we went through it. In fact, you beat Bowser, even. When we went through it all in the last little bit. And those last couple levels, I would say, like, I'm pretty good at the first handful levels, because when I got back into it, those are the only ones I would constantly replay over and over and over again.
Right. And, you know, just to, you know, follow up on that as well, it's also one of those things, I know we've also discussed it on the previous podcast that you had me on, when it comes to being a kid and you having all the time in the world to, you know, and you don't have the money to buy these other games, so you just play the ones that you have over and over. So as a kid, I did beat all the original Mario Brothers games, but today, you know, in this day and age, I went back and tried it again. I'm kind of like, okay, I'm gonna like I really need to get reacquainted with this again.
Oh, it's true.
It's like, oh my goodness.
It's funny too. So I was listening to I've promoted these guys before. Drinks with Larry is an awesome podcast, and Larry, the host of it, was talking about how with his kids he had an NES and Super NES Classic and everything, the you know, the HD system or whatever. And his kids were trying to play some of the old NES games, and they were getting so upset. They're like, this is hard. And he goes, like, you're damn right it's hard. And this is the only game I had for freaking 6 months, and so I had to freaking beat it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. I see, like I said, I didn't get my first console until much later, so I didn't really get to experience as much of that. I still had to experience it, like, I swear, I feel like such a brat even now, because like I remember getting the N64, it was the one that came bundled with Donkey Kong 64, and it had the RAM expansion pack and everything. And I remember I was so mad at my parents because I didn't understand what I was given. I didn't understand how fucking expensive the N64 was when it came out, and how expensive the games were. But I'm like, this isn't Sega Genesis. I want Sonic, and I didn't realize it was like a newer console. Better, that's, you know, up to your opinion, you know, if you do you like Sega Genesis or N64 more. But either way, like, I didn't know what it was. And so I remember the very next day, it was Christmas that I got it. I went out and we went to Blockbuster when that was also still a thing. And I rented Pokemon Snap there.
Oh, yeah.
That was another good title.
Yeah.
But so it's just kind of funny because, like, I remember, like, even to this day, my N64 library, I think by the time we ended it, I had about 15 games, which is still a lot if you really think about it. But there's a handful that I just played over and over and over and over again, like just constantly trying to get that through. Ocarina of Time, of course, was one of them. Also, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater. I could beat that game in less than an hour now. I've played it so often.
That's, yeah, like one of my favorites. Yeah, you already told
me about that. And sadly enough, I just beat this for the first... I beat Mario 64 for the first time.
Oh, just recently?
Yeah, just recently, nice. Like a couple weeks ago. On my way to Banjo-Kazooie now.
That's one I haven't... I didn't have an N64 growing up, so I'm starting to play, like, you know, all the old classics that people
so
rave
good.
About. So I have Banjo-Kazooie and Tooie.
They're really good.
I didn't get too far in them, but, you know, I feel like that could be our friendly rivalry.
It's good. Yeah. But no, like you said, though, like, especially... games like, to get back to Mario 3,
yeah.
Tangents, in fact, another funny tangent to that tangent, two guys in the game, I just keep referencing podcasts in this episode, they are the kings of tangents, specifically Kaz. If you ever get to listen to that podcast, they'll start out on a topic, and he will just start quoting Rick and Morty for like 20 minutes, and it's really funny. In any case, to bring it back to Super Mario Brothers 3, what we were talking about is how as a kid you would just have hours and hours of time because you only owned like two or three games or just one, and so you had to devote all your attention and focus to that game. And Mario 3 is the perfect example of a game that required that.
Absolutely. And so many hours were wasted playing that game. I mean, I don't even call them wasted. Yeah, they weren't wasted, but they were put to good use, I guess. I don't know.
It taught you patience.
Many
it taught
hours
you that
went by.
A lot of it's yeah. going to require a lot of hard work to get to the desired result that you want. So let's dive into the game. We were kind of talking a lot about around it.
Yeah.
And let's really dive into what made it great. And in my opinion, to how Super Mario 1 really redefined, like, really created what good level design was. I shouldn't say created, but really, like, set a standard for it, I should say. Super Mario Brothers 3 redefined it and made it even better. Because
yeah.
each level, I mean, this game was just, there was just so much more to it. It wasn't, in Super Mario 1, you had 8 different worlds, 4 levels in each world, correct? It was the 3 ones
yeah.
and the boss world, right?
Mm-hmm.
The boss's castle. In this one, you still had 8 worlds, just like Super Mario Brothers 1, but you could see it on a map. There was about 8 different levels in each world, sometimes more, sometimes less. There, you could skip levels depending on which routes you took through the map that could benefit you to get through the worlds faster, but it could also hinder you because of what we would see towards for the final bosses of the final levels of each world, which we'll get to in a second. But each of the, but you could pick and choose what path you wanted to go through, and then each world had its own collective theme. So the first world was pretty much just your generic Mario, kind of like just generic Mushroom Kingdom. Second one, if I remember correctly, was desert. Third one was kind of water, and it went on and went on. There was one world that was just big. Everything was just big. Or was that a specific level? Yeah, world four.
Yeah, world four.
Was the whole world big, or was it just specific levels? I can't remember now.
I think it was specific levels. I don't really remember off the top of my head.
But to continue on with it, like I said, it's Super Mario Bros. 1, but more. Super Mario Bros. 1 was known for its secrets. They took that to a new level in this game. Like, this game just literally took everything that made Super Mario Bros. 1 great. As cliche as this sounds, it's the fucking truth. It took everything that made Super Mario Bros. 1 great and amplified it and just made it better, which you didn't think was freaking possible.
Yep. Yeah, they definitely redefined the game, and then they went back to the original concept, the basics of the gameplay and the mechanics. The cool thing about this game is, too, is that you can actually walk back. In the first Mario, you couldn't do that. Which, it's like, oh, I missed that block. Oh, wait, I can go back and grab it this time.
This was also the first Mario game that allowed scrolling in two directions. That's why you could go up, down, left, and right. If you notice, on the original Super Mario Bros. 1 and 2, you could only, it would only scroll horizontally or vertically, not both at the same time.
Right.
Super Mario Bros. 3, since it allowed the new power-ups, which we'll get into as well, one of the power-ups, the raccoon, or the Tanuki suit for one, and then the raccoon tail for a different one, you could actually fly, or like float for a decent amount of time. And so, because of that, you would go left and right and up and down all at the same time, or diagonal in some instances. And to get a little tech geeky with that, that was one of the new things they added with this game. Now, what's interesting about the NES is that the hardware itself was very limited. On average, the NES could only, portray, like, basically two, if you want to think about, like, screens at a time. It could store four, but it could only really interact with two. It's a really weird concept to understand, but if you think of like a grid, like four square, like when you're a kid in like elementary school, in each square is a portion of the screen. Now, the NES needed to store up to four in order to run, but the graphics card could only really display two. So what it would happen in order to store, the game system would mirror. So if you think of like a side-scrolling Mario level, right, you see one screen, and as he moves across, the screen changes. Well, think of that one screen being spread across the top two squares of the block that the NES can have, right? And then underneath it, there is another square. There's the bottom two squares in this, like, four square little thing. It just mirrors it. Now, the thing is, though, the GPU, or the graphics processing unit, doesn't really look at that at all. It just kind of looks at those top two, and that's also... And so to load everything, essentially, if you look at the edge, if you think about where the TV is on that, those top two rows, like if say it's in the dead center of those, that's what you see on the screen. There's loading bars on the left and right of it.
Yeah, they're and normally so, like what blue or black. It depends. Well,
I mean, you don't really see the loading bars on the screen, so you don't really know what colors those would be. But in terms of like visually, go ahead and like put them on there. But so they would be a couple pixels outside the side of the screen, if you want to think of like the Mario level going past the screen in a weird way. And so that's how it would load. And now the NES did not have the ability to load in two directions. It could either load left to right or up or top to bottom. So now there's games that could cleverly mask that, games like Metroid, and we talked about Super Mario Bros. 2, where one section of the game you would scroll from left to right, but if you jumped, the camera wouldn't move with you. It would just stay put because you could only scroll left to, the screen would only scroll left to right. You would switch over to, you would go to a new room, and now all of a sudden you're going top to bottom. And if you tried to go from the left or right side of the screen, you would come... So say you ran all the way to the right, you'd come back to the left or something. You'd come back on the other side. So they would hide it that way. Now, the way... So the NES couldn't normally do things like what Super Mario Bros. 3 was doing because of that limitation. It could only scroll left and right. I probably could have ignored the whole, like, GPU thing I was talking about now that I think about it. If you guys, I'll put a link to this in the notes, where there's an awesome YouTube channel called Retro Game Mechanics Explained, and they explain how this loading bar thing works. So in any case, the NES natively, to kind of bring it back and bring it back into layman's terms, I guess, because I didn't even I could barely understand what I was saying with it, but the NES natively could only scroll in one direction at a time. It could not do both. It could not do up and down and left and right at the same time, like Mario 3 was doing. But what game developers would do to get extra life out of their chips is they would add these things called memory mapper chips to the cartridges themselves. They would actually put more processing power on the game cartridges themselves in order to extend the life out of it. That's how games on Super Nintendo like Star Fox even existed, because they created the Super FX chip to allow the Super Nintendo to do what Star Fox did. So the NES had things similar called the memory mapper chips, and there's different versions, MMC1, MMC2, MMC3, so on and so forth. The most common games, the most common one that you would see in later games was the MMC3 chip, which was Super Mario Brothers 3, Kirby's Adventure, things like that. And that chip, for all intents and purposes, gave you the ability to scroll in multiple directions. However, because of that, you kind of lose that loading buffer zone. So remember, like I said before, the loading zone for the screen was just outside of the TV screen. So you wouldn't see the level load in front of you and deload behind you. When you scroll in both directions, you lose that buffer. So the loading thing is right up on the edge of the screen. So if you move fast enough, that's why in Mario 3, you'll see discolored sprites on the far right side of the screen, because the loading bar is still not, it's just on the edge of the screen. So it causes some delay with that. And that's the end of my tech spiel. I couldn't think of a good segue out of it.
It is very informative, though, and it is kind of cool to, you know, go back and see it for yourself, and that way you know the technical aspects behind why these things are happening.
Dude, this type of shit fascinates me. I'm going to post the video to it. I had to watch that fucking video like 4 times to understand what they were talking about, but it still fascinates me that's why it is, because the NES could not load in two directions. I probably should have simplified that originally, because like I said, thinking back to what I was saying about the memory banks and like how it's, think of it like a four square as a kid, that is a horrible image. I don't know if you're hearing this now, this, it may have been cut out prior, who knows. So in any case, so Super Mario 3 did a lot of, like, that's a new thing that they could do. Now, I don't know if it was the first game that used the MMC3 chip, but it definitely was the first popular game to use it. Or maybe the first, I don't even know, I'm pulling that out of my ass too now that I think about it. But it was a big game, and it used these new technologies to make it even better. And with all these new technologies, because of this technology, it allowed the game developers to try new things. This is where you get the new power-ups. And so I would assume I would know everyone's favorite, but Casey, what is your favorite power-up in the game?
It might be, I mean, excluding the super power-ups.
the invincibility ones?
Like the P-Wing? I'm not going to go that far. Okay.
We'll talk about that afterwards.
Yeah. Probably just the, you know, the raccoon.
The raccoon suit?
Yeah,
okay.
Raccoon suit, yeah.
Because, see, what's weird is I didn't know that there's so many different suits. I mean, you have, besides just the power mushroom, you have the fire flower still.
Mm-hmm.
You have now the raccoon suit. You have the tanuki suit, which one of those can make, I know the raccoon suit can make you fly, but the tanuki suit I thought also made you, like, you could float with it or something like that?
You can fly, and then you can turn to stone.
That's what it was. Yeah. That's what I thought. I thought it only did one or the other. Like, I thought there was another suit that only turned you into stone, which is just weird. I guess, does that make you invulnerable?
I think so. I should know this, but I very rarely ever used it.
That would make sense. I heard there was a use for turning you into stone, mm-hmm. like an actual, like, legitimate use, like maybe for a secret or something, but I can't remember.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's been too long, and, you know,
it's been a while. that again. You didn't even say it.
Yeah, and just the fact that, you know, I can't even think about it off the top of my head, just, you know, it's It's making me look bad.
It's all right.
You know, you're like, oh, this is the Mario experts.
Well, you are the Mario expert still. But no, so you also have the frog suit. Am I missing anything, like, of the different suits that you could get?
There's the Hammer Brothers suit.
The Hammer Brothers. Okay, yeah, yeah.
Hammers.
That thing was awesome, too.
It was cool, but I the trajectory of the hammers was really goofy. But well, I thought it was neat otherwise.
Plus, you did need to use it to break through different sections, because there's even, like I said, the secrets were elevated, so there's secrets on the map, not just in the levels anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you could get win these things. You could win. Did you get P-Wings for every time you beat a castle, or just there was only a handful of times you got it, I think?
Yeah, there were only a handful of times. For the most part, it depends on what castle you beat. You know, you can get the cloud, which will help you skip a level. There's the P-Wing, and then sometimes, like, if you beat a hard boss at the end of the world, they'll be a dick and give you the jukebox, which is, like, useless.
Yeah. But then some of the other power-ups you would end up getting, like you said, the P-Wing and stuff like that. I should say a power-up, but, like, probably the greatest secret of the game are the flutes. The, what are they called again? They were called something.
Well,
specific. I'm blanking on the word. Magic whistles, magic flutes.
Yeah, one toot on this whistle and it'll take you to a faraway land.
Yeah. And there's three of them in the game, and the infamous scene from The Wizard that showed you how to get the one in the first castle of the game.
Yeah.
There's two in the first world. Not the first level, but the first world.
Yeah, three and the castle, or not the final castle, but the one in the middle of the level. And the fact is, you know, I know it's a movie, but nobody would know that.
No, there's no way.
Nobody would know that
there's
on their
no
first
way.
Attempt.
And this game was just filled with freaking secrets. Like, there's just so much, like, and that's why I said I would bring this on a desert island, because there's just so much to do in this game. Like, if you really wanted to go through, and so when we played through this game, we used the warp whistles because we were kind of short on time. And if you really wanted to go through and play each level of this game, you know, the eight levels and all eight worlds, that's 64 levels. That's a lot. That's a lot of game to play. And they crammed a lot into it. I also liked the new abilities you got, Mario. They kind of took, like, the idea from Super Mario 2 where you could pick things up.
Mm-hmm.
You can now pick up the Koopa shells and throw them. You could also, besides picking those up and throw them, you could slide down and kill enemies that way by going down the slopes. And you could even use that as a momentum booster. I remember some of the levels you could slide down and it would curve up towards the end. And if you jumped right at the edge, it would shoot you across the screen. They just, in terms of the mechanics and controls, they really, like, knocked it out of the park on this one.
Yeah, they really did. And the cool thing is, too, is not only did they include newer power-ups for this game, but the fact is that you can store them for a later time to a level that's really difficult and go back to it is really, really innovative. And it was very key importance in beating, you know, those later levels in the game when the difficulty just gets insane.
Astronomically hard.
Yeah.
The other night, like, before we were playing it, I went over to a friend's house for a retro game night. I think, like, the day before, actually, you came over, and we were playing Super Mario Brothers 3 as well, and we were just trying to go through to see if we can beat it to the best of our abilities. We didn't, but it was still just a ton of fun, and we were, like, just going through the last couple stages, and we saved up all those items for those last couple of stages, and it was, I mean, it got us kind of far, but the other thing, I guess, to talk about gameplay with it is that this was a really cool two-player mode. You could, in Super Mario Bros. 1, the way two-player would work is that you would take turns on a level, and if I believe as long as one player completed the level, they could move on to the next stage and keep playing. It wasn't until they died that it switched, I believe. I don't remember exactly because it's been a while since we since I played the two player. But in Super Mario Bros. 3, you would take turns after each level, which made it a lot more fair. In addition, you can work in conjunction to beating the game. So one player could beat level 1 while the second player would jump straight to level 2. The only catch is that if you are the player that dies, any level that you completed is now no longer complete and it has to be rebeaten.
Yeah, that, I mean, I at the time I felt like that was fair, and I liked the fact
I still think it is fair.
It is cool, too, that they did more of, like, a cooperative approach to it. Because it is, I mean, you know, a two-player game for the original, each one can play the same level. That is cool, but, you know, it's working annoying. As a team... you're right, but I meant, like, at the time when you're a little kid, it's like, oh, let your brother play. And it's like, all right, well, he can screw up all he wants. It's not going to affect my game.
I'll just unplug the controller and hand it to him, and he thinks he's playing.
True.
I mean, I never did that. Actually, I never did do that.
I never did either, but, you know, the jokes...
But
they're real.
But no, so they the game itself is just they up so much, like we've said so many times before, they up the ante so much, and like with the two player thing, with all the different power ups, the levels themselves had new designs, like so many different secrets, and I guess to continue on the graphics now, like the graphics once again blew it out of the park. Like, they just kept upping the ante with graphics from Super Mario Brothers 1 to Super Mario US 2, whatever it was, and now Super Mario 3. The graphics on it just look amazing. What's always interested me, though, it's like, if you look at it, Mario's overalls change color as the games progress. I believe the first one, it starts out where he's, like, wearing a red shirt with, like, white or black overalls or something. I think white overalls. And in this one, it's now red overalls with, like, a shirt underneath it. Or something like that.
Yeah, so...
Sorry, blue overalls with a red shirt, and the other one is red overalls with, like, a blue shirt.
But I think in the actual game, his overalls might be black.
I don't think so.
No?
It's hard... it looks like he's wearing black pants. It's hard to tell, though.
Yeah.
Depends on what power-up it is. We're looking at pictures right now, so if you can hear some clicks, that's why.
Yeah.
But no, so... they changed the art style a little bit for Mario. They made him a little bit more cartoony. Like, in the original Super Mario Brothers, he's just very sprite. He looks like a sprite. He's very... Not a lot of definition. Doesn't really have much of a face or anything. He's just kind of got two stubby arms and legs. But in Super Mario Brothers 3, he actually has... Like, they kind of went with almost a more anime aesthetic. Like, he actually has eyes... his eyes actually stand out. He actually has a big nose. He's much more like cartoonish looking, and that makes the game, in my opinion, a better looking game, because now there's like an art aesthetic to it instead of just kind of like weird looking pixels, if that makes sense. Well, the original Mario game didn't look bad. It just, you know, Mario 3 looks better, understandably, because it was like 4 or 5 years later.
And it is pretty fascinating too, for the fact that within 3 years, I'm just going by the date it was released in Japan, that it progressed aesthetically, like, so much mm-hmm. on a system that was very limited. You know, when you have a system like the PlayStation 3 or the PlayStation 4, if you were to play a game within those 3 years span, you're not going to see too much of a difference. But I mean, for the most part, I'm just speaking for myself... I don't really see too much, but for something like this, it is pretty fascinating, like, how much they upscaled the things with the hardware that they had at the time.
Well, and really, you didn't really see crazy graphical leaps on the PS3 until the end of its life cycle, and the PS3, 360, and Wii, all those guys, they had long life cycles.
Yeah.
PS3 came out in 2006, and PS4 did not come out till what, 2013?
Yeah, so that was like a November 2013.
That was a 7 or 8 year long life cycle. The Xbox 360 came out in 2005, I think, because the PS3 was 06. Xbox 360 was 2005, and that, you had almost a full 10 year life cycle, if you think about it, because it was 8 years. Xbox One came out in 2013. So, and it really wasn't until the end of the PS3, mainly because the PS3's, like, infrastructure on how they, all, like, it had, like, a 7-core processor, which is a weird number of cores for a processor. Like, programming for it was a bitch, so it wasn't until the very end of its life cycle that people were like, oh, this is how you get enough, all the power out of it, that kind of thing. And, like, I mean, the same goes for every game console, like, the earlier games aren't going to look as good as the later ones because developers are still learning how to tinker with it. They're still learning how to make the game system better, and Mario 3 was no exception. But like I said, they used the MMC3 chip to also help the graphical. Like, a lot of the stuff on Mario 3 could not be done, like I said, on the original NES hardware alone. Not just technically, but I think even, if I'm correct, even graphically, the MMC3 chip that they had in the cartridge did a lot of things to help the game advance the game's look, feel, and play on it.
Yep.
The one thing I always wish they would have done on the NES is that, because there are certain games that were released on the Famicom disk system and then released in the US as a cartridge. For example, Castlevania 3 was a Famicom disk system game, and when it was released in the US, as a cartridge. But the Famicom disk system, like I said in a previous episode, had additional sound channels, so you'd get a better, a more full sound. I never understood why I feel like there had to have been some way they could have figured out how to get an extra sound channel by adding some weird type of tech onto a cartridge. But I don't know if that would have been possible at all, I wonder if that all had to be, I'm not enough of a hardware engineer to really know any of that kind of thing, but I just always wonder, what would the games have sound like with just one extra channel or something like that? I mean, Mario 3 already sounds amazing, but I wonder if it was released on the Famicom disk system, did it sound different? Did that extra sound channel do anything to it,
right?
So the graphics of the game is just, they're fantastic. I mean, they look great, they're pleasing, they still look good today. In fact, I mean, a lot of people still use it for their YouTube art stuff and everything.
And it's funny, too, because as a kid, growing up with Super Mario All-Stars, I was, I was drawn to the current graphic and music that was used in that particular version of the game. However, even back then as a kid, being a stupid kid, being like, oh, well, this system's better because the graphics are better.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters. Even back then, I was so infatuated with the Super Mario Bros. 3 NES version that I would go out of my way to play that version
over the
All-Stars version sometimes. Yeah.
Well, and especially back then, graphics played a big role into games, though. That's where the graphics war, the hardware wars really started, because, it was so, I want to say it's easy to update graphics, but if you look at it, the games now, the difference from PS3 and PS4 is, it is noticeable, it is a big difference, but look at NES to Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
That is a huge difference.
Jump, yeah.
It wasn't until 3 years into the Super Nintendo that NES games started looking even remotely comparable. Not as good, but just comparable to the lowest tier of graphics of Super Nintendo games. So the jumps those made were huge. But mm-hmm. with PS3, the end level PS3 does not look that much different than current PS4. I mean, it's noticeable that generally the frame rate's a lot higher on new stuff, but you get the idea.
Right.
And even look at the Super Nintendo Donkey Kong Country.
Oh my god, that game today is just beautiful.
That was one of the greatest, I don't call it a con because they didn't really cheat anyone out of money, but it's one of the greatest hacks ever. If you think about it, it was developed by Rare, right? I know we're not talking about this game, but it was all pre-rendered 3D images that they turned into sprites, so it tricked you into thinking you were looking at a 3D game. These were amazing graphics. It was just 2D sprites. It was no different than Super Mario World.
Mm-hmm.
But everything was pre-rendered in 3D, so it looked so amazing. And that really pushed the Super Nintendo. The year that Donkey Kong Country came out was also the year that Super Metroid came out. And that was the year that the Super Nintendo finally started outselling the Genesis. Interesting little history tidbit there, yeah. The Genesis was outselling the Super Nintendo for the first couple of years. It beat the Super Nintendo to the market by a year or so, and it was just selling better. But once those 1994, man, Donkey Kong Country and Super Metroid killed it. Just killed it. In any case, let's talk about the music. I mean, we've said it all before on the other episodes. The music's great. I mean, I really wish we could offer more to it than just saying it's great, but it's great. They took the Mario theme, the style of music, and just made a new version of it, and it sounds amazing.
Yep. And even to this day, you'll see a ton of YouTube videos that use that music. They will cover it in different types of genres, and even in the newer Mario games, they will basically remaster it and, you know, kind of do like a remix of it to include it in the newer ones. So, yeah, I mean, it's like you said, there's really not a whole lot to say about it. I mean,
it hasn't already been exactly said. That's exactly the, that's the tough part.
Catchy, noticeable.
You're going to be singing all day long.
Yeah, right now I got it in my head.
I guess to kind of wrap this up, we've talked about before with the other games with the legacy. I kind of saved the legacy with Super Mario, the original Super Mario Brothers, because we're going to be doing another episode about Mario before this month is out. And I want to talk about that then. But at least with this one, I would say its legacy is that it showed... It was the beginning, not the beginning of the end for 2D game design, but the beginning of what great 2D game design would be. What they started refining in Super Mario Bros. 3 would ultimately be mastered by the end of Super Nintendo. And I don't mean just Super Mario World. I would even say Super, like, Yoshi's Island was a mastery of, like, 2D game design. Like, this was the start of, like, how do we take this, like, the two-dimensional platformer art form and really push it to its limits. And I wouldn't even say they hit the limits by any stretch of the imagination with this, not to say that's a bad thing, but this is just the start of it. They pushed the NES to its limit, to its technical limits, which in turn made its gameplay fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that, in my opinion, there's this, once again, this is all speculation and hearsay, but this is my opinion, is that it set the groundwork for games like Super Mario World. I mean, obviously, because it's the next Super Mario game in the series, but it set the groundwork for other, you know, great platforming games that were on later consoles. Like, hell, even look at, like, you know, the Mega Man X series. Granted, most of their, you know, most of their inspiration was from the original Mega Man series, but still, like, you know that other developers were looking at what Nintendo did with Super Mario Bros. 3 and being like, well, we don't want to copy it, but what lessons can we take from them? Lessons about what, how good, like, secrets, how to hide secrets and how to make them, like, visible enough where if you search, you can find it, but at the same time, not too out in the open and stuff like that. How can we make gameplay fun, but like, teach the player at the same time? But teach a player at the same time, so that way it doesn't feel like we're constantly shoving a tutorial down their throat. Because games did that a lot. Mm-hmm. Well, games do that even more now, but games still had to do that, especially back then, because they were all in the manuals. Generally, it wasn't in gameplay, but Mario taught you intuitively through gameplay versus through a manual. Now the manuals are all built into tutorials on modern games, but you get the idea. So I would say the legacy of this game is really just like the start of the mastery of 2D game design.
Yeah,
it was the groundwork for it.
Yep, absolutely. And then, you know, as I kind of mentioned in the first Mario Brothers episode that we did, you still see these indie gamers today using the same type of formula to make such great games that people just rave about. And it's really no different, for the most part, than the original Mario Brothers games. Specifically, Mario Brothers 3. But, you know, it all depends on what you're playing. But it's... the mechanics and the gameplay, they just stand the test of time. It's more or less flawless.
It's arguably the best game of all time.
Absolutely.
So, to wrap all this up, guys, thank you all once again for listening. Some shout-outs real quick. Shout-outs to The Apex and The Abyss. No Geeks Allowed, spelled K-N-O-W, No Geeks Allowed. Two Guys in a Game, The Hotter Show, Drinks with Larry, Christian and Damon's Amazing Nerd Show, which you can find just at Amazing Nerd Show on Twitter, and 4205 Cast. I think I've gotten everyone, I hope. I hope I didn't miss anyone. It's been a long night of recording, but seriously, please go give them a listen to. They're all amazing podcasts. They've all supported me, and I want to, you know, do the same for them, support them. So please give them a listen. So you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. You can reach out to me, StillLoadingContact@gmail.com. And also, please remember to rate and review the show on whatever podcast app you're listening to, on iTunes, on Stitcher, I don't think I'm on Stitcher yet, on Spotify, on Google Play, whatever you're listening to it on, please just give it some reviews, and because it helps get the name out. I hope you all enjoyed this episode, and I guess that about wraps up what I have. Casey, do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Sure. I'll just plug my Instagram again. I am Kazuya Kane. That's KazuyaKan, as in November, E. I mainly just post a lot of video game stuff, my collection, memorabilia, a lot of retro, some new, anything video game related. So, you know, feel free to take a look.
All right. And that wraps everything up. So thank you once again for joining me, Casey.
Always a pleasure.
And, love it. I think that's everything. So thank you all again, and we will probably see you all next time.